Hello and welcome back to another episode of the HRER podcast, where we delve into the world of HR emergencies and scandals. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to HRER on your favourite podcast platform.
Get ready for scandalous stories, lessons learned, and a generous dose of advice for HR professionals for navigating the HR landscape.
Our goal here is not just to entertain, but also to help you learn from the topics we touch on in order to save your business from its own emergency.
We had an employee signed off sick who was completely unengaged in meetings. Every conversation ended in floods of tears, and she refused to engage with anything. Yet the next day, she'd be all over Instagram promoting her own business, posting content, and calling herself a girl boss. Would love to get your take on this.
She didn't have permission for this side hustle. This was not something that she'd brought to the attention of the company. It's not something she told them when she started her employment. And actually, the stuff that she was doing was quite close to potentially being in conflict with what the employer did. Nobody is stopping anybody from bettering themselves, but you can't do so in breach of contract. People don't read them. It's a legal document, people. Read it before you sign it. Just before we start, protect your business from the risk of tribunal, reduce legal costs, and save yourself from HR headaches with our Heroes software and employment law consultancy services.
Welcome back to HRER. What, I don't know what episode we're on.
Do you know, we've done so many, I've just lost track.
Same.
We're here podcasting again. It's HRER. And I'm Alyssa Thursfield.
Ollie Robinson.
We have a new layout.
We have new chairs.
Sweet, so it's nice and fresh. And as always, we have a new story.
We do. We do. It's a tricky HR dilemma, as the email calls it. I'll get stuck in straight away. Hi, Alyssa. I've got a tricky HR dilemma that could make for a great discussion on the podcast. We had an employee signed off sick who was completely unengaged in meetings. Every conversation ended in floods of tears, and she refused to engage with anything. Yet the next day, she'd be all over Instagram promoting her own business, posting content, and calling herself a girl boss. Would love to get your take on this.
So this one happened relatively recently.
Okay.
And it's great that actually we get clients now saying, please put this on the podcast, which is really cool. So in this situation, we had the employee who was becoming increasingly difficult to manage in meetings, not engaging, getting very upset, but had a bit of a side hustle going on. Now, she didn't have permission for this side hustle. This was not something that she'd brought to the attention of the company. It's not something she told them when she started her employment. And actually, the stuff that she was doing was quite close to potentially being in conflict with what the employer did, their
competing
business.
Competing for clientele type thing.
Yeah, I suppose reasonably you'd look at it and think this person could be a competitor.
Mm-hmm.
And the duties and stuff that she was doing for this own business of hers were also very similar to the duties that the business were asking her to do. So that's sort of the background. So as you said, we've got someone who's not engaging in meetings, getting very upset, floods of tears when we are trying to manage her, but then in her private time, outside of work, working on her own business, and heavy usage of hashtag girl boss accompanying those posts. So yeah, big cringe from you there.
Yeah, it's not the one, is it? I mean, she doesn't sound like she's displaying girl boss energy during work.
No, so who are we, I suppose, to say? Well, who am I to say what girl boss energy is? I would say perhaps not being in floods of tears during meetings. It's a bit of a marker of mine. I've never cried in work.
Never?
Ever.
Okay.
Never cried in work. And I don't see it as like a weakness thing. I have been known in some of my private volunteering activities, so with the RNLI, references to me having a heart of stone or being called an ice queen. However, I've always taken the view that if somebody at work were to do something enough to make me cry, time's done. It's time to move on when you get to that point. So for me, it's not a normal part of behaviour, whereas for other people, crying something happens every day. You know, it's something that is part of their normal emotional range. Maybe I've got a very limited emotional range.
Maybe.
Maybe that's where I've got to. I feel like I'm in a therapist chair. but for my limited emotional range, it's not part of my day-to-day life. But some people do get very, very emotional, and it's just part of, you know, normal life. And for them, it's not part of a relationship breaking down. This individual cried a lot.
Like
cried a lot.
I don't know. I suppose it's one thing crying at because of people is one thing, which arguably should never happen in work. But like crying because of, I don't know why she was crying, but because of her work.
Well, we can go through and unpick the situation. Yeah. So we can kind of give a little bit more detail here as to what the situation was that the employer was facing. But that's kind of the backdrop, which is, you know, every question that we're raising, any challenge that we're giving, anytime we're asking her to, you know, provide her input on something, it was floods of gasping tears.
Oh, God.
That there was no language coming across at all. It was just having someone who was sit in a meeting and break down, that's essentially.
Oh, God. Let's start with the employer perspective then. How should an employer handle a situation where an employee is too unwell to work their job but appears to be actively running a side hustle?
So in this situation, it wasn't immediately obvious that she was unwell. Mm-hmm. Though I suppose you could say if someone's constantly crying, that's probably an indication that something's not right somewhere. So she was citing that it was mental health reasons, that she was struggling to cope with work, the demands of work, and basically couldn't engage in any performance management issues, which is what these meetings were about. Her performance wasn't up to standard, so she wasn't doing things to the required standard. She wasn't hitting targets. She wasn't producing content to the level that she should have been doing. Her work related a lot to social media, so she wasn't putting things out on social media. She wasn't checking the accuracy of stuff. So when we pulled her into the meetings to say, well, look, these are the issues that we've got with your performance and these are the expectations of the role. What is your take on it? Tears. Can you explain to us why you're not able to meet the expectations of the role? Tears. So there was no kind of response, no engagement. It was that kind of level of upset that we were dealing with. So we then get the fit note signing her off from work saying that she was not well enough to engage in not only her day-to-day role, but also not well enough to engage in company meetings, which is a bit of a rare distinction. Normally, a fit note or a sick note will sign someone off sick from work.
Blanket.
Yeah.
It's a blanket
but we can
thing.
Still kind of engage on, you know, we can have capability meetings, sickness review meetings, you know, we can...
Catch up with people, don't you, if they're off for a long time.
This fit note said no. She is not well enough to attend or do any of these things, that it makes her too distressed, she's too emotional, her mental health can't cope with it. We then see that she is engaging in essentially exactly her role, but for her own profit. So she is doing what the expectations of the role are to a much higher standard, but not for the business, for her side hustle. So in that situation, we have got a conflict where someone is saying that they're not well enough to work. She's not well enough to do her role. She's not well enough to hold meetings, but is well enough to do it for her own business. So in those situations, we're starting to think, well, okay, we've got a fit note that says that she's not well enough to do this. We know that mental health in terms of medical testing is very, very difficult to verify.
It's hard to diagnose, isn't it?
Really hard to diagnose, but also, you know, much goes off the way an employee or a person presents and their own reported symptoms.
It's an inside job, isn't it? They tell you how they feel, sort of thing.
So there is scope. Now, I'm not saying that this is what this person was doing or what this is what people do, but there is scope for that to be abused.
Of course, yeah.
And we call that malingering. So where they're either exaggerating symptoms, so we're not saying she didn't have problems with her mental health, but where you're exaggerating symptoms or swinging the lead, essentially, so that you don't, you know, that you can get out of doing work. So we had a reasonable basis in this situation to say, well, actually, the conduct in your private time is conflicting with the information that you are giving us about your sickness and that warrants a formal process potentially. The difficulty we had here is the doctor said she's not well enough to engage in a process.
It was this doctor, a GP?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, right. So not an expert in mental health or psychiatry or anything like that. I'm immediately dubious, Lisa, sorry. Immediately when you say GP.
I hadn't picked up on that at all. So in this situation, then we're going back to occupational health. Let's do an occupational health referral. Let's look at seeing if we can get her independently verified and let's get a bit more information here about her sickness and about her health. And look, we don't necessarily have to have this person in for a meeting. We can look at dealing with things via correspondence. So we can write emails forwards and backwards with questions and taking information. We could look at virtual meetings. You know, there's lots of other things that we can do. So it doesn't mean that this necessarily just has to grind to a halt.
Second question. At what point in the process does this become a misconduct issue rather than just a tricky conversation? And can we dismiss if it is found to be misconduct?
So malingering is often classed as something that's serious misconduct because not only have you got someone who is potentially being dishonest about their health, they're also in receipt of sick pay. So whether that's SSP or actually company full-blown sick pay where they're getting full pay. Mm-hmm. So there's potentially fraudulent activity in claiming sick pay and not working when they're not sick. There's a dishonesty point because obviously lying about their health.
Trust in it.
And then we're getting into trust and confidence. Mm-hmm. So you can tell we've been doing this a while now. Mm-hmm. You're getting the cues. It's good.
I like the trust one.
It's serious misconduct. And if you have got someone who is abusing company policies, who's lying about their health, knowing the strain it puts on other people at work as well, other people were having to pick up her workload, which is increasing their workload as well. It's disruptive to the employer business. This is serious conduct. So when we're at the point where we've got a reasonable basis to investigate malingering, we are moving over into that disciplinary, the conduct side of things.
It gets a bit more serious.
It does. And it's one of those situations where we've got to be very careful. Are we saying she has done something wrong? So she has intentionally done something that is against company rules. That's conduct. Or are we saying that there is a situation that's out of her control, so relating to her health or her skills, in which case it's capability? It sounds really easy. Is it something she is doing on purpose, or is it something that she can't do?
Right.
Which is the very kind of black and white of the situation. But so many employers choose the wrong reason when it comes to dismissal.
Right.
So we'll remember we've got five fair reasons for dismissal. Mm-hmm. We've got conduct, we've got capability, we've got redundancy, we've got statutory reasons, and we've got SOSR, which we're coming on to in a couple of episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Conduct and capability are the two big ones. But if you don't pick one reason and stay in your lane and use the right policy, a tribunal is going to undermine your decision.
If you like, you chop and change sort of thing.
They'll say you've picked the wrong, you couldn't work out what you were dismissing this person for.
Don't look good.
You've got to nail your colours to the mast and pick your fair reason and be reasonable in having selected that reason. So in this situation, if we dismiss her for capability, do we reasonably believe she's not capable of doing her role? Or actually, are we dismissing her because we're annoyed that we think she is well enough to work and she isn't doing? So this is where we get those blurred lines. So it's really, really important then when we're dealing with these situations that we separate the two processes and that we're very clear. We're either writing to her on capability or we're writing to her on a disciplinary matter. We can have the two running at the same time, but we need to be very clear on what we're actually dismissing for if we get to that point.
Can you dismiss for, I imagine there's been cases where there's like two or three predominant ones of the five going on, where you can dismiss for like two of the reasons?
So you have your predominant reason for dismissal.
Right, okay.
And what you can then kind of do is you have your, well, if we hadn't dismissed you for this, we would have
got
dismissed
you
for this.
Right, okay.
So what that gives us is a level of resilience when it comes to tribunal.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the judge goes, nah, I don't think this was conduct, I'm not convinced. Mm-hmm. But we go, ah, oh, but judge, had we not dismissed for that, we definitely have dismissed for this. What it means is you might still go down for unfair dismissal. So you get a judgment against you, but you're in with a decent shot of getting that compensation reduced potentially to zero.
Okay.
So on the face of it, the employee wins.
Yeah.
But they don't get anything for it.
Right.
So most employers aren't actually that bothered if someone says you unfairly dismissed this person. It depends on the circumstances of the case or how heavily you're criticised.
Bothered about the cheque, aren't they?
But yeah, if you're not having to put your hand in your pocket for any compensation, they're not always that bothered, and they'll take that sometimes as a win. So when I'm dealing with these situations where we have got these conflicting reasons, we will often put that in. What we can't do is just kind of have a carte blanche with it, where we say, well, had we not dismissed you for this, we'd have done it for X, Y, and Z. We need to still have the reasonable basis for our backup. We need to show that we've investigated. A tribunal won't just take our word for it that we would have dismissed. They expect to see evidence of investigation and that it's reasonable for us to say that we would have dismissed for that alternative reason.
Due diligence.
Yeah. You can't just throw it in. You've got to show that you've done the homework.
We think it might have been this.
Yeah. Exactly.
Chuck enough mud at a wall, don't you?
And that's not the case. You don't throw enough mud and see what sticks.
No.
You've got to be reasonable. We've got to have our evidence.
I never imagined it would be in the case of the law, to be fair. But
No, in the employment world, who knows?
No.
Who knows? It's where we could end up going.
Third one from an employer perspective. Should social media activity be considered when assessing an employee's fitness for work?
So this is a really big question. And it's something employers come to me a lot with, which is, this person's off sick, but Janet from accounts has said that she's seen her on Facebook and she was down the pub on Friday. And it's, you tend to get it where it's coming from other people within the workforce, that they know someone's off sick, their workload's gone up, or they're miffed because the weather's nice and they haven't been able to go and have a day off as they see it.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's it. They're all over social media and they're trying to find something that undermines the fact that someone has said that they're not fit to work. So the short answer is we can potentially use social media for monitoring and verifying absences. However, as always, we have to be reasonable in what we're doing and we have to go back to our policies. So if we haven't warned in any policies that we might use various means, including social media, to monitor employees and the reasons why, we can't do it. So I would be expecting to see in a policy that we may use several means to monitor you during your employment, including social media and online activities. And the reason for this monitoring is to ensure compliance with company rules, policies, and your contract of employment. Okay. So we're being clear that that is what it is being used for. Whether that is right or wrong in terms of ethics, morality, trust, that's a matter for your business. Mm-hmm. But fundamentally, if we haven't warned we're going to be doing it, we shouldn't be doing it. When it comes to monitoring and data protection, there's lots of kind of really, really strict rules that we need to follow there. So in this situation where we do have a monitoring clause, thankfully, in this policy, social media is a legitimate way that we can monitor if we were going to be checking up on things. If we just happen to stumble across something, so we're not actively going out and stalking someone's social media, have we crossed a line? Are we monitoring, or has the evidence fallen into our lap? I suppose it'd be a matter for what the employee and a judge is going to believe. But I would say always, you know, if we're going to use private information that someone, although once you put it out onto the internet, nothing's really private anymore. I would still be upfront that there is the potential that we're going to use those means mm-hmm. to enforce company policies and procedures. So it can be done. It's just how far you're going to go with it. And what does it actually show? So in this situation, it showed this person was doing something that was directly conflicting with her sick note. What we need to be careful with is where we've got situations where, for example, someone is signed off with stress, anxiety, depression, and they go on holiday. And this is a real bugbear with lots of employers and the rest of the workforce when they hear that someone's off sick and now they're in Benidorm, stood on a bar top singing karaoke. And they'll be like,
is vitamin C good for depression?
Saying, well, look, yeah, she doesn't look very sick, does she? But rightly so. Doctors will often, so GPs will often tell an employee, that, particularly in situations where they're off sick with depression, stress and anxiety, if the employee says, well, look, can I go on holiday? They say, I think it might be very good for you. Mm-hmm. It's not actually conflicting with their sick note. Doctors don't expect people with stress, anxiety, and depression to lock themselves in the house, shut the curtains, and kind of wait for it to pass. That's not how it works.
I think that's how some people think it does, though.
I think they do. That they expect someone to sit and sort of quietly rock in a corner until they start to feel better.
Yeah, it doesn't work like that.
It's, you know, if people want to be proactive in terms of recovery, if those options are available to them, sometimes that might include going on holiday.
Yeah, absolutely.
If, however, you've got someone, for example, who is off with arthritis in their knees. Mm-hmm. So they've got a physical job, they're struggling with the job, and they've got an arthritis flare-up. However, they're then seen on a climbing holiday and they're, you know, scaling Kilimanjaro and
knees,
you know,
be working fine,
hanging off an ab sail. That's probably going to conflict with the sick note in terms of the holiday that they're taking. So again, what we're looking for is inconsistency. Is what they are telling us inconsistent with what they are showing that they are able to do? And the one situation I had where I did put my head in my hands was where, I mean, I make it sound like that's unusual. I do it daily. I mean, not cry at work, but despair is a perpetual feeling.
Deep sighs.
I had an employer where they had someone who was off sick, and she said that she was having mobility issues. She couldn't leave the house. She couldn't drive. She couldn't, you know, do the shopping. She was essentially housebound. And they came to me and they said, we've got her. And I was like, what have you got? And they said, she's been out shopping. I was like, fantastic. Why should I care that she's been out shopping? They showed me footage of her carrying heavy bags of shopping from Tesco.
Right.
Walking to her car, loading the car up, getting in the car and driving off. So I was like, well, you are right. This conflicts with the account that she's given us.
Right.
But okay. Why do you have video footage of one of your employees going into Tesco's, coming out of Tesco's and driving off? Oh, we got a PI.
Oh, work.
So they took the monitoring to a next level. They got her followed.
Oh, work.
That's a trust and confidence issue. That the employee finds this out, that's constructive dismissal. Oh, that is, this is not good. So we've got to think, if we are going to go down the rabbit hole of let's find stuff that's inconsistent, if we think someone's lying, we've got to be reasonable. Please don't set PIs on your employees.
That's crazy.
Don't do that.
Like, culturally, if I worked at a place where, like, if you set a PI to my house, I'm not going to go mental, do you know what I mean? I'd be concerned. I'd be like, listen, what's going on?
Are you telling me that the boundaries are the boundaries there? That's
I've
okay.
I've set the boundary. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, we'll have Michael in your hedge.
Oh, God.
Looking.
Don't, because he started to dress like me.
Is that the conversation I overheard today?
Yeah. He came to work, he cosplayed as me today. He had the same hoodie on, light jeans and white trainers.
I am going to point out that the hoodie is a company issued. It's not true, that you've gone into, I don't know, where do you shop? Top Man, and Top Man doesn't exist anymore.
Top Man's not a thing.
H&M, I don't know, bought the same hoodie. I don't know.
The death of the high street. Yeah.
My husband's a tradesman. I buy all his clothes off from Costco and Amazon.
Not something you're too clued up on. We'll do last question on employee perspective, then we've got employees to come. What policies or contractual clauses can help businesses stop the issue of employees working side hustles while on sick leave?
So, as a minimum, we should be having in the contract that if somebody wants to undertake work of any other kind, provided they're not on a 0 hours contract, so 0 hours, we can't keep them exclusive to us. We've got to let them do other things.
Okay.
But we can specify it doesn't conflict or compete with us. So, clause that says they have to seek written permission. And also, potentially asking at interview stage, are you running any side hustles? So let's kind of get notice of this before it happens. And then looking at our monitoring clauses. So how are we going to monitor? Why are we going to monitor? And what do we consider a reasonable means to do so? And what is our justification? And making sure that employees are aware of them. It's all very well having a policy, but if an employee hasn't read them, then we're going to struggle to enforce them. So it's really, really important that those policies are visible and easily accessible. And here comes a plug. On our software.
I was waiting for that. I was going to go with you.
It's not even on the agenda for today. It just came so naturally. That we have not only our policy generator, the ability for people to upload them, but also to see that an employee has read them.
We do, yeah, we do.
And if someone hasn't read them, we can then go and chase them and say, you've not read the policies. But at least then we can say that we have drawn their attention to it. And if they've chosen not to read it, then that's a matter for them. So that, I would say, is the minimum standard.
I was literally going to say the same thing. I've got a meeting with a guy tomorrow to set up his company's policies and handbook and stuff. And it's dead easy. 5-minute job, no sucking eggs. But that plugged on. A thing I had to ask actually on this question, with the clauses and contract stuff, equipment, is that equipment part of it? You know, if she was using company equipment to like profit.
Yeah, so if she's using company equipment, that's even worse.
That's a thing, isn't it?
Yeah, so if she's using company equipment to do non-company related things, again, mm-hmm. provided it's in the policy. So some companies, it's kind of anything goes with equipment, which these days we really shouldn't be doing. We need to be kind of locking down what people are doing, because if they are surfing unsafe or unsuitable websites, if they're not using VPNs, if they're doing things they shouldn't be doing, it can expose company information and company systems to unacceptable security risks. And it might even be that it invalidates your cybersecurity insurance if you're allowing people to do things that they shouldn't be doing on company computers. So if it isn't already in your policies, I would suggest that you update them. But also, yeah, that could be a potential additional allegation if it's in the policies and she's done contrary to that.
I can't remember where I read that. I think it was
probably in one of our policies if you're implementing them at the moment.
It might have been, yeah. Mm. It might have been, but I remember reading about equipment, and if people use company equipment for their own profit, then that can come up in tribunals and what have you.
Yeah.
Employee stuff now. If I'm signed off sick but able to do some light work on my own business, is that wrong? Where's the line?
So if you're signed off sick, I would say the best route here is always transparency with your employer if you feel that you are able to do something. Because if you feel that you can do something on your own business, your employer is naturally going to ask, well, if you've got the ability to do that for yourself, why can't you do it for us? So when you're signed off sick, it's not always as clear as you're off or you're not. A GP can often say that you are fit for light duties, you're fit for phased returns, you're fit for some things and not for others. So if you're giving an indication that actually you are capable of doing something, then it's likely that you should have disclosed that to your employer. And again, this may well be in the sickness policy that if your sickness status changes, you are under an obligation to tell the employer. Now, there was a tribunal case recently where an employer lost on this point, where an employee did have a side hustle. The employer said, well, you're well enough to have been doing some work, so you should have told us. And I think they ended up dismissing her or him. I can't remember. And what the tribunal said was, I mean, it wasn't really something that was generating much or any money, but even that, the tribunal said that wasn't important, that this was something that would proactively support the person's recovery. It was something they were passionate about. It was very much kind of hobby and project based.
Okay.
And that it was supportive in terms of positive improvement of mental health, because it gave this person something to focus on without pressure. So work with work. So work you're paid to do. by your employer, there does come an element of pressure with that. There's performance expectations, you know, standard quality is set by somebody else. And what the tribunal said was that pressure wasn't there. This was a passion project that was going to help support this person's recovery, and it was unreasonable for the employer to have taken the action that they did. So I think from memory, I think the tribunal basically said that they should have done more investigation, they should have looked into this more and been more open-minded about what this person was doing whilst they were off on sick leave. Right. And it's possible that their policies didn't support what it was that they were trying to assert. So if you have got someone, you know, who does something, for example, very, very technical, requires a huge amount of brain power and is very, very like attention to detail, but the weekend, or, you know, and they're off sick, but they're able to go and paint watercolors and they happen to be selling them on eBay. Is that really conflicting with their fit note if it's something that perhaps allows them to relax?
The two are very different.
It's two very different things. Yeah, they are, so just because they're doing something that could be classed as work, that they might even make money out of, doesn't necessarily conflict. So we have to take every case on its own facts, assess every situation, investigate. It's that reasonable approach again. It's not just one size fits all, which is why people like me are in a job. Because if it was one size fits all, the law would be really easy. It would be, here's a set of rules that apply to everybody in exactly the same way, reasonable or not, objective or not, this is what we do. But we can't do that.
It's not how the world works, is
no,
it?
Every case on its individual facts, and we've got to be reasonable.
Yeah, it's interesting that. Yeah, I'm quite a cynical guy. Aren't I? Sometimes. I never saw it from like a holistic standpoint, you know what I mean? Where like someone might not be at work, but this doesn't apply to Mrs. X here, but they might not have been at work, but when they're not at work and they're off sick, they're doing these activities that they profit from, but it's doing them good in the long run, eh?
So for example, I'm going to say this because if I say it on a podcast, it might happen. It's my birthday soon. And I've asked my husband for my birthday. Don't laugh.
Sorry.
I don't know if you heard the conversation with Michael yesterday.
Go on.
I want to start keeping bees.
I can remember this. Yeah. I can remember this.
So I want a hive. I want to learn how to keep bees. So it could well be that if I'm not well enough for work, that I'm well enough to go and do my beekeeping, harvest my honey, make some candles, make some soap. And the whole, it's very holistic. You can't shout around bees. You have to be very calm. So, you know, you can't have a phone ringing all the time. It's very holistic. That wouldn't necessarily mean that I'm not well enough to girl boss it and come and do what I do at work every day. So yeah, I'm all for, you know, let's take a broad approach to these things. But now I've mentioned bees on the podcast, Fritz, you have to get me them for my birthday. So
that's crazy. I didn't hear the conversation. I think I caught the tail end of it. You were talking about honey.
Yeah.
And like hay fever and stuff.
Well, you'll know after the beginning of April, actually, no, because I won't be harvesting till the summer. You'll know in the autumn if I start bringing in things to work, whether or not the bee venture was successful or not.
There will be signs, won't there?
There will be signs.
There will be signs. Second question, is my employer using my social media activity against me an invasion of privacy? And why can't I be a girl boss?
We've kind of covered the social media stuff. So if it's in the policies, then they potentially can be. Also, if you don't want your employer to see things, lock your social media down and stop posting things on social media.
Although I never got that. So it's not very social, is it?
So it depends, I suppose. So the example I'm going to give here is the royal family.
Okay.
Apparently they have social medias, but only within the royal family can see them.
Crazy.
So their social circles are obviously very, very tight, so that things don't leak out into the press. It doesn't mean that all 8 billion people on the planet have to see what you had for your dinner or hear that you whinge about the traffic on the M25. You know, it's, you can use your privacy settings so that only people within your social circle can see what's going on. I suppose inadvertently, you might think someone at work's your friend and they're the person who screenshotted it and sent it to your manager.
Snakes don't hiss. They take screenshots of your stuff.
I have never heard that before.
Never heard snakes don't hiss?
No.
You say anything. Like snakes don't hiss, they just, I don't know.
That was a lot of alliteration though. Snakes don't hiss, but they take screenshots of your social media. Wow.
A lot of S's, yeah.
That was a lot of S's.
For a man with a lisp.
So yes, it could be reasonable depending on what the policy says. Why can't I be a girl boss? Well, you can, but not if you're going to cry in every meeting that your line manager has with you at work. Nobody is stopping anybody from bettering themselves, but you can't do so in breach of contract. It's really, really important that we are consistent with the contract of employment that we have signed. It is a serious document. I think people forget sometimes. So when you sign, you know, a contract to buy a house or to buy a car or to agree to, I don't know, do something, I don't know. I'm a lawyer. I should know the reasons why people sign contracts. Yeah,
finance
we take stuff. Those contracts yeah. very seriously.
Oh, yeah.
Employment contracts. If I had a quid for every time someone said to me, "I have a contract. I've signed it, but I didn't read it," I would be a multimillionaire. I swear down. People don't. Have you read yours? No, you didn't. You didn't read your contract of employment, did you?
No.
You sat there squirming away.
I trust you.
You sat there squirming away while I'm saying this. People don't read them. It's a legal document. People read it before you sign it because they'll say, "Well, I didn't know that was in there," but your signature's on the bottom. So it's really, really important that we take it seriously. These are contractual obligations that you have agreed to. It doesn't just mean that because you wake up one day and decide being a girl boss means that you're selling things on social media, that it's going to be okay with that legal document that you have signed.
No, absolutely
read
not.
Your contract, Ollie.
I'll do it. Was this person, this? I'm going to make this easy for you. Was this person younger or older than me?
Younger than you.
Skill issue, Generation Z. last question. If I feel unsupported at work, how can I say my side without being seen as difficult?
So this is a really good question. And it's something that I would say the opposite of what you just said. I think people in an older generation sometimes are more concerned about that. They feel that they'll be seen as difficult or challenging to work with. I would present the problem, but also what you see the potential solutions to be. So it doesn't have to be like, "Oh, I'm so sorry for raising this." You know, we don't have to talk in those terms, mm-hmm. but it could be, "Look, this is my perception. I don't mean to necessarily point fingers of blame. This is how I feel this can be resolved in a constructive way." When things are raised in a way that's, you know, very emotional, the perception from the employer, rightly or wrongly, can be that this is going to be disruptive and that we need to kind of minimize the fallout from this. Mm-hmm. So I would say, think through what it is that you are saying. Can you factually back up what you are saying? If it's the way that you feel, then present it as the way that you feel. Don't present something as an out and out fact if you can't back it up. And you never need to be ashamed of your feelings. You can absolutely tell your employer, "This is the way that something has made me feel, and this is what I see the potential solution to be." That is a much more business focused, rational way of presenting an issue that you're going to get engagement with, rather than saying, "This is what's happened to me. I expect everything to be cleaned up."
It's not a black and white situation, is it?
The reality is your welfare is part of the duty that an employer has when they employ people. So regardless of how you present yourself, you should not be seen as challenging or difficult. But it's not the way the world works. Human nature takes over. So if you want the best chance of something being taken seriously, try and present it calmly in a factual way without going into over-the-top detail or, you know, why use 1,000 words when 100 will do. Back it up with facts and try and present some solutions as well.
Yeah, just to add to that, would it be to like sort of decrease the severity and reactiveness of it, would it be a good idea to perhaps just wait a little bit after something, a feeling struck, or and collect your thoughts, you know?
Yeah, so sometimes the best thing to do is nothing in a situation.
Take a step back. That's what you say.
Take a step back, take a breath. Because sometimes in the heat of the moment, something can seem much worse than it is.
Yeah.
And actually you sleep on it, you wake up and you think, "Did that person really mean to say it that way? Was it personal? Or during a heightened emotion, have I taken that the wrong way or have I misheard something?" So I would always say sleep on something. I always say never send an angry email at the end of the day.
Oh God, no.
Take a breath, sleep on it, read it again the next day.
You're not going to be angry in the morning, are you?
Well, you might be. Might need two sleeps, might need three sleeps, whatever it is. I generally would never, ever, ever send an angry email on the first draft. It's going to be so full of heightened emotion that you may well regret further down the line the language that you've perhaps used to say, you know, what the problem is. So, take a breath, stand back, think, did this person actually mean me offence? It's very, very rare that someone sets out to actually intentionally upset somebody.
Especially at work.
Yeah. So if we approach things with the mindset that, you know, even if it feels a bit naive, that the starting point is that people mean me well.
Mm-hmm.
So let's think about what other interpretation there could be of something I've taken offence to. We're less likely to fall out.
Definitely. Sort of summary then. And what emergency measures can HR departments take to prevent these sort of things happening?
review policies and contracts and make sure we've got those monitoring clauses, make sure that managers aren't overstepping the mark on monitoring. So, you know, if we know that this is going on as a practice, also update your sickness policies so that people are very clear on where those boundaries are, and also check your contractual clauses to see that whether you are restricting people from working elsewhere or not.
I'll check my contractual clauses.
Check your contract.
So what happened with this? I think I can guess, but...
She was dismissed.
Yeah. Not capability, surely. So when, she was capable.
She was capable of doing the role because she was doing it privately in a conflicting business. We went through several meetings where she sat there in sort of breathless tears. But ultimately, you know, she was told, look, either we are going to engage in written correspondence with you. This issue is not going away, because one, it feels like you're competing with the business. Two, you are malingering and you're being paid full company sick pay. So she was on full pay while this was happening as well. So when the disciplinary allegations were put to her, from memory, I think she resigned, and we didn't hear from her again. So there was no tribunal proceedings.
So she didn't even get paid out?
Yeah. Nope.
Shame, innit?
I suppose girl bossing's easier to do with severance, but whatever. You
know? Oh, shouldn't laugh at these people. That's it. That was a bit of a long one, but... Good giggle, good story, wasn't it?
Good one. Thank you, as always. And we do love dealing with the stories that are being sent in. So please continue to do so. Thank you for watching, listening, downloading. And it's great to still be in the top 20, which
was
17, I think, last time I looked.
I haven't checked in a while, to be honest with you. But we could do. We're bumping these views up so we can get that up. You know what I mean? Yeah, we've been getting more views, haven't we?
We have been getting more views. It has,
My mum keeps telling me.
It's no longer just Ollie's mum. So hello, I've never actually met you, but I hear loads about you. So, and he does take your feedback into account, I promise you.
I do, yeah. But yeah, thank you for your time. Like, comment, subscribe, and yeah, thank you. Until next time, we're your hosts signing off from HRER. Take care of your HR and may your workplace be disaster-free. Before we go, a big thank you to you for tuning in, and don't forget to subscribe. If you have your own ER stories or suggestions for future episodes, reach out to us at Heroes or on social media, or even HRER@heroes.co.uk. As we navigate the maze of workplace blunders, remember that no organisation is perfect. But by sharing these stories, we can all work towards creating healthier, happier, and more productive workplaces.